Honorable members, this morning you there was a whole session about time frames, timelines, whatever you want to call. And when you're supposed to start, time frames, timelines become an issue. Dr. Rabi, you're welcome. Good afternoon. Sure. Now, can everyone join us, even those who are having their own workshop outside the door? Can we have one workshop?
Just to start with the announcement is that I think colleagues from NCOP, they are missing the register. If anyone is having the register, please, it's requested to bring it over to the table, to this table. That's one. We have invited the secretariat. Welcome, Deputy Secretary. Coming to tell us where the offices are. When are they going to open? of the is coming here on Section 15 of this Act. Secretary, Section 15 says that we will open those offices. But on a serious note, I think that everyone is back now. You're welcome. We invited you just to assist us in terms of implementation of Section 15, that is about the budget office. I'm not sure about the what you will have there, but I hope that you will talk about other experiences elsewhere about this monster. I know that that was not the mandate that you got. Those eyes are beginning to put that question. But I'm not a study tour fan, but I think that for this one, I would like to lobby the members that for this one, we'll need to have some kind of experience elsewhere, how it has worked and those kind of what they call it, things. But let's just, we have welcomed you, Mr. Kutsi. Can I hand over to you now and your team? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Honorable Members. We were asked to come and report on the readiness on the implementation. Now, the word readiness is relative in this instance. Just wish to point out, this Act was promulgated and assented to in April this year. So it's at the start of the financial year. So it falls under those category of items unforeseen in the particular financial year. So it leaves us with a situation where we didn't plan for this, but we will have to implement it. Right? The budget office is established in terms of Section 15 of the Act, and its main objective is to provide independent, objective, and professional advice and analysis. That's in Section 15.1, subsection 1 of the Act. The core function is to support the implementation of the Act by providing research and analysis. So that is the main purpose, and that will determine the characteristics of what this office is supposed to do. And the way it is going to provide research and analysis, it has a number of sub-functions. Now, I must emphasize the nature of these core functions because that will determine how we set up the type of competencies and skills within the office. It must provide, it must annually review, provide annual reviews and analysis of relevant documents submitted to Parliament by the executive. It provides analysis and advice on proposed amendments to the fiscal framework, the Division of Revenue Bill, money bills. It monitors and synthesizes matters and relevant reports tabled and adopted in the House with particular emphasis on the report by other committees. It keeps abreast of policy debate and developments on expenditure and revenue. It monitors and reports on potential unfunded mandates, legislative, policy, and budgetary mandates, and it undertakes research on the request by both houses. That is what this office is supposed to do. Now, just to summarize, it has primarily a research and analysis function. It does reviews, it advises and gives analysis, it monitors budget implications, it looks at policy on expenditure and revenue, it does monitoring and reporting, and it does research. So that is basically the main purpose and the main functions. The Act then also goes into subsection 5, where it sets out that the committees must find a person and recommend this person to both houses, the respective houses, a person with a requisite experience, qualifications and leadership skills to manage the Parliamentary Budget Office in line with the functions outlined in subsection 2 and 3. So the person specifications are defined more or less. There's no detailed job specifications and competencies, but those things we design as we go along. The second point in relation to this office, and especially the person that must head the office, which they call a director in the Act, is it says the conditions of service, including salary and allowances of the director, which must take into account the knowledge and experience of the person, and substantially be the same as that of the top rank of the public service. Okay. So the top rank in the public service is the director general, and the second rank is the deputy director general. So I do not know whether top rank means whatever, but that is what probably the committee will guide us to tell us to do. So it says the conditions must be substantially the same, you know, in substance. Further, the Act goes on to specify, and I think it is subsection 13, that the director, not the parliamentary service, not the parliamentary administration, the director must appoint deputy directors and personnel with the requisite experience. The director, in consultation with the committees, must determine the structure and must also determine the conditions of service of deputy directors and personnel in the budget office, which must take cognizance of the conditions of service of officials in the parliamentary service. So while the director's conditions of service substantially is the same as that of the public service, the deputy directors and the personnel must take cognizance of the conditions of service officials in the public, in the parliamentary service. So it might appear that there's two sets of, might result in two sets of determination. So that is what the director does and is responsible for setting up the office. Before we go on to some other suggestions that we want to make, I just want to draw the committee's attention to subsection 10 of section 15, where it says the Parliamentary Budget Office must annually receive a transfer of funds from Parliament's budget. And I think this is what indicates the independence of this office from the parliamentary administration. Political parties receive transfer payments for constituency allowances and other allowances in the institution. And our anticipation is that in the same way, this office will receive annually a transfer of funds from Parliament's budget. It further says that the director must annually submit to Parliament a rolling three-year budget and a report on the use of funds and activities of the Parliamentary Budget Office. Now, the assumption we can make is that this budget is submitted to the executive authority in Parliament, the executive authority being our Treasury, which is both the Speaker and the Chairperson acting jointly, and that this office or this director then also reports on the expenditure of the funds or the use of the funds and the activities of the budget office to that executive authority within the institution. We've asked the question as to who does this director report to, and we don't have an answer yet, but if we look at the third bullet on the slide, we want to suggest that the director has a contractual obligation with the executive authority of Parliament. In this instance, the executive authority is the Speaker and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, because those are the persons that would approve leave and determine salary. You know, that is where the accountability or the contractual relationship lies within the institution. For the activities of the budget office, our assumption is that the director reports to the committees that this budget office provides support to. And that brings us to the next question that we wanted to ask guidance of. Is will the Parliamentary Budget Office provide full support to the committees vis-a-vis the committee section? What other functions do these committees have? For example, oversight and legislation. So it might mean that there's certain functions and support provided by the committee section, as we know it in the administration of Parliament. But on the other hand, the Budget Office provides separate or more dedicated support in terms of the research and analysis that is required, or how is this relationship seen within, or what is the expectation from this committee in particular and other committees. This is an unplanned expenditure or unplanned setting up process. So in the immediate term, we probably have to look at requesting funds from our Treasury as the Speaker and the Chairperson from our retained income. Our retained Parliament doesn't surrender its unspent funds. Right? It retains that funds. So once we have a budget or a set of figures to support the setting up of this office, we have to request money from our Treasury. And alternately, when we do the adjustments appropriation later in the year, since it's an unforeseen and unplanned expense, possible expense, we can request adjustments that this matter be dealt with in terms of the adjustments appropriation later in the year. What we also want to suggest is that, firstly, the process of setting up the office is a joint committee's process. The committees must determine the job requirements, the specifications, and the qualifications. It must advertise and headhunt or determine whatever selection process it wants to follow in an open and transparent manner, because that's what the Act prescribes. And it must also then set up the selection process. How will you do the selection? It must interview and recommend to both houses. A cursory glance, just to make another point, a cursory glance of where some of these offices exist normally has a very highly qualified individual as the head of the office, either as the budget, they call it the budget officer or director or the chief. And this structure or the office normally has a couple of elements to it. The one is expenditure and revenue analysis, that's one area. Then there's economic and fiscal analysis, which is the second area. And then it also has an area of program evaluation. And then it also has a small component of planning and management processes. So those are kind of the four sub-components that make up the office in if you look at a cursory glance at some of the experiences in other countries. So that is what we would like to introduce to you, Chairperson. Thank you. Expenditure and revenue analysis, economic and fiscal analysis, program evaluation, planning and management.
Thank you. Sometimes when I meet you in the public, I have another way of addressing you. Well, that is the presentation on the preparedness of the Parliamentary Budget Office. I think that I'm not sure if there are any questions. It seems that this presentation is very clear. Will the members engage in the question? Are they happy? Well, I'll start with Honorable Comrade Machine, Hosh Machine.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson, but it's just a question of clarity. When you read the Act, it talks about the main objective, and then it comes to something called core functions. I'll need to be clarified exactly how those things differ. One differ from the other one. And the other issue is these core functions. Are we saying that they are going to be the functions of the budget office on its own? Are they going to be delegated functions from the relevant portfolio committees? I'm actually looking at the flow of information from that office, whether the office does things on behalf of the committees and for the committees, or the office will be doing things in accordance with those core functions, can distribute reports out willy-nilly without authority of the relevant portfolio committee. I just want to get that clarity, because I'm just looking at the situation where when they've done budget analysis and the rest, and you may find that they put up as booklets and then distribute out, and the authority, where the authority lies actually. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Comrade. Is that all? Ms. Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm sorry. I'm covered. You're covered. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to emphasize, it says the main objective is to provide independent, objective, and professional advice and analysis. So it's to Parliament. It says independent advice, objective advice. And then there's a very nice clause also in section 15, subsection 9. The director shall be obliged to report to Parliament any inappropriate or executive interference to prevent the office from providing independent, objective, and professional advice on matters related to the budget and other money bills. So this office accounts to its committees. The budget office accounts to its committees. The director is accountable to the committees that it works for, the appropriations committees. It can issue its findings, its analysis, independent of other committees, because its advice is independent and objective. obviously it is going to impact on the other committees and the work that the other committees do. Now, that protocol of the relationship between the various portfolio committees and these appropriation committees and the budget office, it has to be worked out in closer detail. It's a bit presumptuous to say how it will work now, because this office will probably have a significant impact on how the budget is viewed, how the budget is analyzed, how the budget is reviewed. Because in the couple of the other countries, if you take South Korea or Canada, for instance, or even a couple of the state legislatures in the U.S., they issue their findings independently from other committees in the parliament. They make findings, they publish, members go to them for advice. They run a number of processes independent of other portfolio committees or even select committees. That's how they operate. To make a distinction between the main objective and the core functions, I would venture to say that the main objective is the ultimate result and outcome that this office must achieve. So this office must provide independent, objective, and professional advice to Parliament on the budget. That is the outcome of its work. The core objective, or the core functions rather, the core functions would be the various outputs it must achieve. Right? And they would usually be either in fact sheets, pamphlets, reports, whatever presentations or sets of advice or tabling with various committees or the appropriations committee or the finance committee. But that would be the outputs of the budget office. But collectively, all those functions together must lead to a particular outcome. And the outcome is that the advice must be independent, objective, and professional. And only the committee can make those judgments that the advice is objective, independent, and professional.
Thank you. The core function of the Parliamentary Budget Office to support the implementation of this act.
Okay.
Is that?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Section 15, subsection 2, the core functions you just mentioned, A through F. Surely these are all right now in the job description of the either the research unit or the committee section. Am I right in saying it?
The research section, to a certain extent, provides reports and advice on a number of these things to the portfolio committees. But I would assume not to the same level of expertise that what the Act prescribes or what the Act expects to be achieved. Because there is we have economists and we have people with economic training in the research section, but I do not know what the level is in terms of the expertise in policy analysis in terms of what this Act requires or whether it's econometrics or whatever the type of discipline is that this Act, particular Act, requires, because there's no particular structure that has been set up. The Act only at a higher level refers to the set of outputs that must be achieved. Now, to do the reviews and analysis, would you just require a researcher or would you require more than just a researcher? And what type of analysts do you require to provide that type of reporting? Also to look at expenditure and revenue areas, what is the level of expertise that you would require in order for this particular office to provide support to the Appropriations Committee and other committees in the institution? We haven't determined those type of things. Because if we look at later on in the subsection 30, it says that the structure of the budget office must be determined by the director in consultation with the committees. So it will be a bit presumptuous of the parliamentary service to determine the structure. We can perhaps have make a set of assumptions for budgeting purposes, but ultimately the committees in conjunction with the director. So the task, the primary task, is to appoint a director. And thereafter, the structure must be set up and the structure must be populated. We can make a set of assumptions for budgeting and planning purposes in order to make available the transfer funding. But it's not for the parliamentary service to determine that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I hear the answer, Chair, but it does to me seem like a duplication of duties. I would imagine if you asked me for a job description of the researcher working on the Finance Committee, I would probably give you subsection 2A to F. That's all.
Maybe the intention was just to ensure that it closes the unforeseen loopholes. The problem they will help with that. But before he comes in, let's come back to Valda.
Madam.
Thank you, Chair. For me, the subsection 15 of the Act is quite clear. And because it says on section 2, or clause 2, which is to give the support on the implementation of the Act, the whole Act. This office will be providing a support on the implementation of the Act, this Act. Then over and above that, it says after you have done that, but there is this other additional core functions that you must take care of, which is A up to F. So to me, it's like now we more like putting the core functions like that different, whereas they're saying in your head you've got the core functions as laid down by the Act. This is what is being expected within the Act, but over and above that, we shall take in cognizance of the other core functions, which are A up to F. That's how I see it, and that's how I understand the whole thing. And when it comes to the organogram, I would suggest that what has been suggested by the Secretariat to put your organogram as they are, where the executive, the speaker sits there, and within the division of the budget office, they've got those four divisions, the broad four divisions, which I'm sure after those four broad divisions reporting directly to the director, they will then have the other subdivisions. Because now if you look at the expenditure, will be looking on the expenditure matters, estimated expenditure, the program and the management will be looking as to whether the executives did utilize the budget allocated to them within what was allocated to them, or was there an over expenditure or under expenditure. So, were the programs aligned to what was planned for, or did you have any, what do you call it, variments or what, whatever? So I would suggest that Chair, really, I think the Secretary did well there to put those broad divisions on top on your organogram. Then it will filter down to the subdivisions. That would be my proposal. We didn't hear. Thank you, Chair.
I don't know. You know, my 2 ears, one is listening to you, the other one is listening this side. I'll tell you that I think that both of you are correct, you know, because this subclause, it says the core function of Parliamentary Budget Office is to support implementation of this Act by undertaking research and analysis for the committees referred to in Section 4, including, in other words, within those core functions, these are some of the things that are contained in this core function. See, I was listening.
Yeah,
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't know, Chair, whether it will be proper maybe to suggest a method that will expedite the implementation of the Act, because it seems to be critically important. Is it allowed that an acting person can fill that post in order for the implementation of the Act?
Yeah, Chair, also I actually just wanted to go past that particular position, because I think this Act is saying that if the director is removed, then the committees then can nominate an acting director. But when I read it, I think I tried to read it overnight. Maybe it was dark, I could not read properly. But it doesn't indicate, I could not get anywhere where it says that particular acting director has got a limited period, because the director gets recommended to the committee to the committees for appointment, but then the acting one is just a nomination. Now I'm worried if a nominated director who has not gone through all the processes then find himself maybe operating for 5 years or for 3 years, and then there is no indication that it will be for a limited period, so that the permanent one can be found. I think that's what I just wanted to check as well. And also, it looks like, Chairperson, some of the things that I may be asking for clarity is things that needs to be unpacked, either in the form of regulations or guidelines or whatever, because there are many things that need to be sorted out. I mean, this director can appoint consultants and all those things. Surely there should be rules of the game that needs to be put in place, you know, to close some of the finer flaws in the processes of delivering this particular service. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Maybe I'm sure the Secretary will respond. But also, we must just put at the back of our minds that the House Chair, when he opened this morning, did indicate that there's another process of experts who are dealing with what. And I think that some of the questions that we're raising, maybe that process can be able to must address them. Honorable Sartre, I see you're preparing to leave. I know that you had requested to leave early. But
yes,
you had
unfortunately, Chair, my apologies. But maybe the parliamentary section can maybe just indicate to the committee whether they have anybody that can assist with the drafting of a job description and the advertisements, you know, for this position, so that this position can be appointed, whether you've got an HR department maybe that can assist with something like that, or how do you propose going about it?
Okay. My question.
Yes. We are a member of the CPA, Commonwealth Parliament Association, and within the CPA there are countries that I assume have a budget office in Parliament. And there's a website. You go to it and see where does it function. You mentioned the United States. What about Australia? Because I think they are very advanced in terms of financial administration. You go and look, what are they doing? How is this thing functioning? What is the job description, etc.? To get some more detail to make up this package. And then we can go forward. And the last thing, practice makes perfect. We must also start this thing and see where is the pain, free pain, to get through it.
You see, that's why you're here. The last part, that's what I support 101%. Let's just put it in action. Otherwise, we'll complain, you know. We'll only test it when it's in action. It cannot be perfect.
Dr. Honorable.
Chair, thank you. I'm perfectly aware of the fact that it's still early days and so forth. But Mr. Chairman, I think we, as parliamentarians, we have a duty as well. Has this particular, the implications of this bill, has it been costed? I think it will be fairly expensive. Is it possible to give us an indication how much it will cost the taxpayer to implement this particular bill? I'm sure they've made a sort of a preliminary costing, or they've quantified it. I'd like to have the input from some of the officials. Thank you, Chairman.
I mean, I'm not used to chairing. Somebody's used to chair me, Mr. Kuti.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the last question, I cannot recall that there's been any costing exercise done in terms of the implementation of the bill. But that will probably be done once we have the design of the office, because probably the bulk of the cost would be around personnel. If we look at the South Korea example, 70% of their budget goes towards personnel, but they have 135 people in their budget office. You know, that's the difference.
Yes.
When it comes to the design and the recruitment of the functions, it's our function. We'll assist. We receive the instruction from the committee, and we receive the approvals as to what is the content of the function in terms of the structure, the job description, what level it must be pitched. It's our function to do our human resources section as well as our organizational development section. It's their function to do structures and designs and job descriptions and place advertisements. So we'll implement that if we get instruction to do so. On the question of appointing acting or interim director or seconding somebody, I don't know what the appropriate way would be. I want to draw the committee's attention to section 15, subsection 5A, that says the committees contemplated in section 4 must recommend to the respective houses a person with a requisite experience, qualifications, and leadership to manage the Parliamentary Budget Office, where the functions are set out in Sections 15.2 and 15.3 for appointment as director by resolution of both houses. So if you don't have a permanent candidate to recommend, I'm sure that you can, it's the committee's decision as to how it starts the particular process of getting a person to manage the Parliamentary Budget Office. It doesn't specify for how long and what the term of the office should be, or for the person. And I think those are types of things that the committee's committee would determine, whether it's for the term of the parliament or how the process would work, or you want to start the office off by having a secondment or by having an acting person. But the parliamentary service can't determine or prescribe this. This must be determined by the committee. We can assist as directed by the committee. Yes.
Yamas. Chair, firstly and foremost, I think I understood very well the chair of chairs this morning when he clearly stated that this is a process exercise. We are expected to deal with a certain portion, not just to think that we'll deal with the whole broader implementation of it. This, therefore, it takes me to say, based on Section 15 of the Act, why don't we start now focusing on the issue of appointment? Because we are told that tools are there. It's not necessary that some of this key function has been performed on the all along, but now it's just that it wants to be guided according to the Act. If therefore that's the case, Chair, why don't we focus on the question of the main appointment other than to deal with it through temporal work, and let's feel the pain, let's correct it as we go on with the process. I propose that it would be better that we appoint, we find a systematical approach to how do we appoint and stick there. And then from there we get the ball rolling. Then we'll see how it goes. Thanks.
Now that question is referred to me now. I think that colleagues will remember that we did indicate from the beginning that let's have engaged now with this. The question that a suggestion that is coming now is meant for that meeting of this committee to look at as part of this implementation process. I think that our staff will assist us in terms of when is this meeting going to take place. I have a feeling that I must thank Deputy Secretary on this issue. It looks like we have exhausted it. We will continue engaging with this matter. It's not the end of it. We're informed that there are other processes that are running to parallel. We'll get those reports. But what is important for us and what is really urgent for us is to is for this committee then to come with that program of implementation. What is it that you would want implemented now and over the period of time, for over how long? It's us who must respond to this question. And I think that we will consult with management, the House Chair, in terms when we meet, so that we can resolve this question. And this question needs to be resolved yesterday, because as we indicated at the opening, that actually this act has already what we call started functioning, whether in a borrowed kind of a way, because when the Minister of Finance earlier suggested amendments, technical amendments, it was based on this act. Now, it is for these committees then to decide. And we would really like these committees to take leadership on these matters, you know. We've been guided. I think that for any other information that we don't have that we need, the staff will always be there to support us. But I agree with the sentiment that says if we are afraid to implement it, we'll never be able to understand what is it that is right or not right. That needs to be attended to by these committees. So this act, I think, is a very important act, not only for us. It's also important for the executive, because the executive also needs to understand their own roles. I think that as far as this program is concerned, we have come to the end of the program. All that is left is item number. What is the number? There's no number here. I'll give here as item number 9, the closing remarks by Honorable C.J. Dibia. Bring your hand.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Also, thank you for the session today. Professor Sandani is a professor at the University of the Free State. He calls this act the roadmap to put us on the road, but you must know where you are heading for, or what you are heading for. I think we will agree that we've learned something today. I was fortunate to have a one-on-one session with Asker Jenkins a couple of weeks ago in May, and that assisted me. The 30-minute appointment was 90 minutes.
and thank you for taking me through this legislation. What I'm actually telling you is we are students in finance. As we are sitting here today, we are students in finance. And you'll stay there for the next 5 years. And if you return, it just carries on. So in actual fact, we must go and do our reading and be prepared when we go to attend our meetings. It's a tool to do our work. It assists us in oversight of our departments and our EXCO in terms of our quarterly reports and annual reports, and that enough time be allocated by the committee section for us to do our work. It gives us an idea of the balance between budget and revenue. And the fact is, we must be practical. This is legislation on paper, but we must go and put this into practice. And that's going to be the challenge. You first crawl, then you walk, and then you run. You don't do it the other way around. It's the same principle here. And the responsibility, I think, is heavily on our shoulders to go and see what happens elsewhere in the world. We're not inventing the wheel from scratch here. Yes, in our parliament. But go and learn from other parliaments. What are they doing? Go into more detail and bring it back to the committees. And actually, we can do it ourselves as members of this Standing Committee on Finance, Appropriation, and Select Committee on Finance and Appropriation. Then, Chair, from the NCOP side, we will have another workshop on this legislation, but also invite the chairpersons of the finance committees in the legislatures to come and attend such a workshop here. Because we are one family, we're not apart, to bring us on board with the legislation. Honorable Chair, thank you again for chairing this session. We were empowered this morning, empowered during lunch, and empowered this afternoon. Thank you very much. Well said.
Thank you very much. I was tempted to clap hands, you know, for you, but I was I quickly reminded myself that I'm in Parliament. On that note, I don't want to spoil it. This meeting now stands adjourned.